Hello and welcome to the Let's Talk Azure podcast with your hosts, Sam Foote
and Alan Armstrong.
If you're new here, we're a pair of Azure and Microsoft 365 focused IT security professionals.
It's episode 12 of season 5. Sam and I had a recent discussion around what Microsoft released in March. Here are a few things we covered. Copilot for security in Microsoft 365. Syslog and CEF AMA connector for Microsoft Sentinel. And lots of Azure changes, features and retirements.
We've noticed that a large number of you aren't subscribed. If you do enjoy our podcast, please do consider subscribing. It would mean a lot to us for you to show your support to the show.
It's a really great episode, so let's dive in.
Hey Alan, how are you doing this week?
Hey Sam, not doing too bad. It's been a busy week. How about you?
Yeah, I think this, the amount that we've got to talk about on this episode, I think says it all, to be totally honest with you. What do you think? I just there's a lot of new going around, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's definitely a burst of stuff. And actually, just thinking about it, I've just thought about other stuff I want to put on this list that we shouldn't probably put on it.
It's funny because when I go to look for like Azure updates, I go to like the change log, and like in January, there was like one page or something like that. And then I think in, you know, February, it was like two or three pages or something like that. And I swear I had to look through six pages of updates in March. And that's not even what we're talking about. We're talking about like security related, you know, updates that we're sort of looking at. There's just loads. It feels like, yeah. I don't know, just been on an absolute spree, I would say.
Yeah, well, I just thought about all the stuff that, you know, potentially got announced at Microsoft Secure that I've not even like included, like, yeah, exposure management and things like that.
Yeah, maybe we should do some of these new things we need to do dedicated episodes on anyway. Oh, right, so, you know,
yeah, definitely. I don't
know, but yeah, shall we get cracking, because we've got quite a lot to get through this week, I'd say. Alan, what do you want to kick us off with first?
Okay, so let's talk about the big one. Copilot for security. Now, generally available as of the 1st of April, so technically not in March, but it might as well be, to be fair. Because it was announced at the Microsoft Secure being, you know, generally available at the 1st of April. So that is now available for the world to consume and start using, I guess, within their Microsoft Defender and Purview and Intune and that. So yeah, that's a really, you know, big announcement that's now available for everyone to use. Still trying to understand, I think it's fair to say the pricing of it. It's fair to say, isn't it, Sam, that it's reason. It kind of makes sense, but it's just working out how best to use it to get the benefit out of all the capability that's there.
Yeah, I think the way that I'm sort of approaching it is it feels like a brand new product. Right, you know, we're sometimes quite lucky with new security products from Microsoft. They're acquisitions, you know, and we within an acquired product, we have, you know, potentially years worth of development, training, guidance, documentation that comes along with those products. Right, they might need to be Microsoftified and, you know, integrated, but the core of the product is, you know, what it was pre-acquisition. To me, Copilot for Security is completely brand new. I don't want that to come across as a criticism at all, because I personally see the way that you interact with it, and sort of the user experience, it's a lot better way to interact with your security tooling via natural language than, you know, having to write KQL, run through lots of different portals, you know, X, Y, and Z. Now, I'm not, you know, the elephant in the room there is how effective is it today? You know, and that can be criticized, and you can benchmark that and rank it. It might not be returning the data that you want. It may be slow. It might get confused sometimes, but this is literally week one of GA, you know, of a brand new product. And what I think the community is trying to get their head around is how you use it effectively, how you license it, because it can be expensive. But you could also make the argument that productivity, accuracy benefits could give you some sort of ROI on that cost. But again, because we've had quite a short, our interaction with it has been quite short leading up to general availability as well, you know. So we have had a chance to use it, to start to understand it and how we would start to use it. But there is a lot to learn, a lot to understand, I think, to maximize the benefit of the tool at the moment. And that's not a criticism. I don't want it to come across as one, because what we are seeing is, you know, insane amounts of development in that area, and it almost changes weekly at this point.
Yeah, and it's a different way of, like you said, consuming your products as well, isn't it? That's completely different. You know, people might be using Copilot for 365, or just, you know, the Copilot side of things, or ChatGPT to sort of ask it questions and get data from the internet, from your data in SharePoint, OneDrive, etc. But this is slightly different, because it's all about the masses of data that is, you know, your SIEM, your defenders, etc. So it is a different way of thinking in that as well. So
yeah, I just think that the big sort of challenge for me to get my head around is with, you know, because it's generative, how grounded it is, how, you know, how much it hallucinates, how accurate it is, you know, compared to other Copilot type systems, you know, because if you summarize a document into a PowerPoint with 365 Copilot, it doesn't really matter, because you're looking through it, typo checking it, things like that. If you're writing code with GitHub Copilot, it might be suggesting code blocks for you, auto completes, and you're still going through and doing QA and understanding that. My sort of thing that I'm trying to get my head around is as you're going through, like, your threat hunting or investigating an incident in real time, how accurate is it for what it's returning back to you? And we're seeing a lot of sort of guidance and documentation from Microsoft about how to ground it in truth, how to really engineer your prompts to get the best out of the tooling, right? So there's a lot to understand and unpick, you know. It's a big one, in my opinion.
Yeah, we'll definitely do an episode on it at some point. It's just, I think we're going to leave it to venture the world a little bit and get some views about how, you know, organizations are starting to use it and that, aren't we? So,
yeah, 100%.
So, yeah. Okay. So that's, you know, it's massive. And again, that's an episode and plus for even good diving into that one. Okay. So for Defender for Cloud Apps, MDA, they released new detections for Microsoft Copilot for 365. So this is looking at activity within the environment on your 365 to see how Copilot is being used. It allows you to then hunt further the type of events that it's creating and things like that. So I think that's really good, starting to bring in some of that visibility of what's, you know, what Copilot is accessing within your 365 environment.
Yeah, no, really good. Seeing lots of customers asking about, you know, technical readiness, security and compliance related around, you know, Copilot for 365. So yeah, that's really good to see.
Yeah, and that just bolsters the other one we announced about, you know, cloud discovery, seeing generative AI in there, so you can start tracking usage there. But this is actually, you know, activity and access now into your environment. Okay, so let's just double check. Yeah, that's fine. Okay, so Defender for Identity. So there's some updates to the agents themselves. But one of the key things that we've sort of seen is now that there's a new graph-based API now for viewing the health issues that you might see on the agents that are on the Domain Controllers. So previously you were unable to programmatically collect that data or monitor that data. That is now available as of, and that I think that was actually only last week that actually came out. So that probably was in March. But that's a really good help for being able to track when stuff is going unhealthy. You know, maybe it's the Domain Controller is under provisioned, or you know, one of the services has stopped working. So
yeah,
and causing blind spots.
Yeah, heartbeat, you know, monitoring of, you know, security tooling is big, important, you know, really up the list, isn't it? So that's really positive to see that you can, yeah, you can, you know, plumb that into whatever system you're using to track.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so Microsoft Sentinel. There was a couple in here, but one sort of picked out was that the Syslog and CEF connector for use with the Azure Monitoring Agent, AMA, is now generally available. I think it's been in public preview for a long time now. But that's good to hear, because you know the Microsoft Monitoring Agent, MMA, is going end of life in August, I think it is. And everyone has to move to AMA previously. So there may be some organizations out there waiting for it to go generally available before using it. If that's the case, then it's now GA. So let's put the take the brakes off and let's get everyone over to AMA before AMA goes end of life. And then probably one or two last from me. One is an extra one that I just thought about, but within the Defender XDR portal, Microsoft have now made it public preview for the Unified Security Operation Platform view of it. So now you're able to bring Microsoft Sentinel into the Defender portal. So now you'll be able to see your content, your analytic rules, the alerts are all in there as well. They're synchronized. And yes, yeah, so now you can... Technically, most majority of the functionality there is now able to do it in one portal alongside your Defender, you know, all the other Defender sort of capabilities there. So even with advanced hunting, that means that technically now you can query against the Sentinel log analytics workspace and the Defender tables. So you can do a cross query there and build some. It must probably be custom detection rules at that point, I think, rather than analytic rules. But you can at least save some queries there. So you can do it across the whole sort of data set. So I think that's really, really good. It's just pushing, you know, us all into, you know, the Defender XDR portal to see all of our security information.
Yeah, no, that sounds really, really powerful. That's for sure.
Yep, and then probably the last one that I remembered, which was part of the Microsoft Secure release, was probably the exposure management that's now been released into the Defender XDR portal. So this is bringing, you know, Secure Score in there, but also allowing you to see, in effect, potential risks in your environment, sort of this is kind of looking at pre-breach protections. So this is making sure that you are as secure, reducing your risk of compromise before you even get, you know, breached, and identifying critical assets within, you know, identity and devices, and potentially be able to see similar to in Defender for Cloud the attack paths, but in effect it's in effect the same thing, but against your devices and your identities as well. So it's just, it's all kind of bringing data in from the products that you have enabled in Defender there. So I think that's a really key part to protecting yourself before or reducing your risk of compromise there.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, because there's a lot of posture, you know, posture and exposure information across all of those different products. So, you know, seeing it being amalgamated into one place is really positive. I really like the meshing around initiatives in there. I think it aligns a lot of the recommendations into, you know, known scenarios that make sense to people, I would say. You know, like there's initiative for, is it business email compromise, things like that.
Yeah.
So you can actually start to focus on, you know, actual real events that we see in the wild and how prepared you are, you know, for those in your environment.
Yeah, and I think there's some like CIS initiatives in there as well, isn't there, for 365 and things like that. So yeah, different lenses determining what you might need to do to, you know, harden or protect yourself.
And those scenarios are real, and it's presented in a way that is real, not just, you know, framework X control 56.5, you know, you should do this. Well, why should I do it? You know, what does it really mean? You know, and I think this links it together with a bit more narrative, personally.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so that's probably my updates around all the defenders and things like that. There were some others in there, but I think they're some of the key ones that came out of last month. So what's happening in Azure, Sam?
Okay, I've got 10 tabs that I'm going to work through. So yeah, we've got quite a few things to talk about. Some of
just
them
10.
Are. Sorry, what did you say?
just 10. That's,
just
that's
10.
Only a page, isn't it? On that you're saying.
It's mental. Right, here we go. So new generation of AMD virtual machines, DAS V6. So this is the latest Genoa fourth generation EPYC AMD EPYC CPUs. We like to promote later versions because they usually give you better CPU performance for around the same sort of price, if not sometimes cheaper. It's a bit weird how that works out sometimes. And also you get any of the other sort of like storage and IO related benefits that may come along with technology that's built into those newer CPUs. So definitely worth checking out if you're using V5s today. Generally available support for Node.js version 20 on Azure Functions. So I don't know what the latest LTS is, LTS Node.js. Let me just double check. Yeah, LTS is version 20. So this is a big release for Node.js, and Azure Functions has got support for it now generally available as of the start of March. There's a public preview in Azure, which is called Change Actor or Change Analysis. It effectively adds two tables into Azure Resource Graph with resource changes and resource container changes, which allows you to summarize who made a change in Azure, with what client they made that change, and what operation they actually made on that object. This isn't something I've looked at yet, but I think this could be really important for sort of observing infrastructure changes in Azure. That has been a challenge previously to understand who did what when, especially if you're further down the line, you know, with new resources coming online. Yeah, in public preview, it's definitely gone on my list to take a look at. Microsoft Entra ID is now being integrated with for authentication with Azure Cosmos DB for PostgreSQL. So again, we're getting a binding into those native PostgreSQL roles in Cosmos DB. So always good to see sort of modern cloud-based authentication integrated with. I can't really call like Postgres is a traditional system, but when it comes to databases and how their authentication usually works is, yeah, it's a little bit antiquated sometimes. Yeah, sorry, go on, Alan.
I was going to say it's good because we're seeing that a lot more now, aren't we? That Entra, Entra ID authentication is coming into a lot more of the stack, isn't it? Where it maybe not have done, because I think it's been a SQL for a long time, hasn't it?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. SQL Server. So, yeah. Yeah. And Azure SQL. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess that means then at some point you'll be able to use Managed Identity Center to access it.
That would be my guess as into what you would generally tend to use it for, right?
Yeah. Cool.
Another one, which I've seen on other cloud providers, I don't know if you can give any insights here, Alan. I don't know what the driver is for this one, but a free data transfer out to the internet when are leaving, so offboarding Azure. I think I don't know who publicly first did it. Was it GCP? And then AWS did it. And now I've seen an update from Microsoft about it. I assume this is... I think it's driven from the European Data Act, but I don't know any specifics about that. But my assumption is it's to prevent sort of vendor lock-in of data within sort of cloud providers. So I don't know if, I sort of saw it as GCP first, AWS, and then Azure, but I don't know if this has all been planned in, it's been driven from regulation. I'm not sure. Where it's come from,
but, yeah, definitely seeing that being a sticking point for moving. Definitely seeing it for not necessarily the clouds, but for other services where in effect no one's moving because it's going to cost too much to pull the data out.
Yeah, and you pay for ingest and then you pay for egress, right? And it's just it's scary. Okay, so another sort of developer-related one. Support for .NET 7, which doesn't really sound that old, but it wasn't a long-term release, ends on the 14th of May of this year. The upgrade to .NET 8 is, touch wood, supposed to be pretty simplistic. Their APIs are very similar. .NET 8 is the LTS release. Azure Functions is retiring .NET 7 on the 14th of May. A cool one that's in preview at the moment is being able to change the partition key of a container in Azure Cosmos DB. This is for the NoSQL API. This is effectively a quick way, a more efficient way of rebuilding the container. From what I can see, is you still need to rebuild the container. They're just going to do it on your behalf. So just makes it a bit easier. This is more for development when you're working out what your partition key can be and sort of promoting development data. Could use it in production, obviously, but that's where I'd see it mainly being used. That's currently in preview, so. I don't know. I'm not sure if I'd run a production change on a preview thing, but yeah, it's in preview at the moment. So going back to the .NET thingy, I should have probably had this one next. So we talked about the move from .NET 7 to .NET 8. Well, .NET 6 was the long-term supported release. Now, weirdly, the support for that actually ends after the .NET 7 support. So .NET was, I think it said May this year. .NET 6 support retires and ends in November this year. You need to look to upgrade your Azure Functions to .NET 8 for it to be supported. It's probably worth calling out, when they retire these versions, your apps will still function. You'll be getting no new security updates, and there's no customer service when they're in their unsupported modes. A big one that came into GA at the end of March, and I only realized this week, was the new Logic Apps Designer for consumption. Have you had a play with it, Alan, and used it?
I have used it occasionally. If you've been using the old one for a long time, it's definitely different. There's pros and cons to it, I think. I think there's more pros, but I think it's more if you've been using the current one.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things you're used to doing and it's just different. You know, it's like, you don't want it, no one likes change, but there are things and they're like, yes, this is great. And then you go to other bits like, oh, wish that was there. I think one of them was, no, is it this one? No, I'm thinking of Flow.
Okay.
Power Automate, not Flow. It's not been Flow for years. Power Automate. because in there you can copy actions and then paste them into the next section. You can't do that in the old one anyway. That's a bit that was annoyance around those two anyway, but that's off topic.
One thing I didn't realize is I do think things have been moved around, that's for sure. One thing, apparently the new designer is open source, apparently. So I don't know if it's available on GitHub. Oh yeah, it is. I found the link for that. Yeah, so the new UI is actually available on GitHub and the issues are open and everything. So it is actually, what's the license? It's an MIT license. Wow. So they've sort of community sourced the Logic Apps user experience now, which is, yeah, interesting to see.
I know there's one thing in it that's one thing that's different is that I think when you open an action, it turns up on the right hand side instead. Yeah. And that's pretty good. But I think there's two X's. And if you press the top X, it closes the whole thing. I think something like that. But I think that might have been fixed
I noticed was is I went to create. I was doing some testing with Security Copilot Logic Apps this week, and I created a new Logic App, a brand new one. And I was like, what is this? Have I created like a standard, you know, have I created a consumption one? Me adding my trigger in was a little bit confusing to start off with. I don't know. It took me a few seconds to get it to work, but after that it was absolutely fine. But I haven't done anything big in it yet, if that makes sense. I haven't, you know, that Logic App was literally like two actions. It was literally nothing. So be interesting to see what's improved there. Sorry, I opened a new tab for GitHub. The last thing that I've got as well is apparently there's free managed certificates on Azure Container Apps. I think I've done an episode on Container Apps? I think I have. But Container Apps are epic if you've got containerized applications, as the name sort of suggests. But apparently there's a free managed certificate for your custom domains on there now as well. So I don't know what the cert is. Maybe it's a Let's Encrypt cert or something like that. But yeah, that's really good because it's completely contained within that solution. You don't have to worry about the management of the certificates and their lifecycle. That makes that you adopting that technology even easier. And Container Apps is in my opinion a really good useful tool for running containerized apps.
Yeah, I did see this one being announced somewhere, and I thought that was really, really good for it because, like you said, it's something else you don't have to worry about. It's all managed by Microsoft, and yeah, it means you can get straight out to being secure from the start for your application. Because I suppose in theory you could do self-signed and things like that.
Yeah, it's a lot of people do sort of. Load balance and firewall their containers anyway, so sometimes it's not so much of a true issue. But it will take a lot of that away if you do want to, even if you want to secure them in a private environment, or you want to sort of have them publicly accessible, then it's no bad thing, is it, to have this sort of management as part of a tool.
Yeah, and I guess if you, like you said, if it's only within the same solution, app to app communication, that might be over the Microsoft public network part between different containers or web apps and things like that, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Then at least that's easily secured without having to pay out for more stuff to manage.
Yeah, so that's my lot. I tried to get through them as efficiently as I possibly could.
That's cool. I do have one more, which I do remember, and I've just been checking that I can talk about it in the background. there's a link anyway to what I'm going to talk about anyway, so it's generally public. But probably going back on our not last but one episode around the customer connection program, and I was saying there's only three or four of them. That aside, with the release of Microsoft Copilot for Security, there is now a new CCP program for Copilot for Security. So if you are looking to start using it and want to see what it's doing and want to be part of its sort of development, its enhancements, its fine tuning kind of thing, I want to give feedback on it so that we can, you know, everyone, yourselves and everyone else can sort of benefit from that, that experience and things like that. It'd be worth joining it. Yeah. So that's along with the other CCPs that we were talking about. That's at aka.ms/joinCCP. That was, I think that was released on the 1st or 2nd of April. So there's only, what, a couple of days, three or four, you know, 4 days being set up.
Nice. Thanks, Alan. Yeah, that's really good to see another CCP. Be creative for Copilot.
Yeah, definitely. I'm sure it's going to be a busy one as well.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Yes. So yeah, that's all that I had.
Cool. Alan, is it your episode next time? What are you going to be covering?
Yep. My episode next. So we're going to talk about cloud PKI within Intune and part of the either standalone or part of the Intune suite there. So bringing device and use certificates being managed by Microsoft and you being able to deploy them via Intune. It seems to be sort of another way to help push organizations into another part of their infrastructure into the cloud there from a security perspective and reducing the need to have, Active Directory.
Alan, Active Directory.
Yeah. It's another step to the cloud, cloud management. So, it'll be a good one. I had a play with it as part of the product preview. I've actually got it set up myself for sort of testing and stuff. So, I can go through sort of what it's like, what you can do, and all that sort of stuff. So I think it'll be quite a good episode.
Nice. Thanks, Alan. Yeah, that sounds really good.
Okay, so did you enjoy this episode? If so, please do consider leaving us a review on Apple or Spotify. This really helps us to reach more people like yourselves. If you have any specific feedback or suggestions, we have a link in our show notes to get in contact with us.
Yeah, and if you've made it this far, thanks very much for listening, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Yeah, thanks all.